Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Auckland's Liggins Institute is putting on a series of lectures this month entitled Nutrition, More Than Just a Good Square Meal. In the first, Professor Lynn Ferguson explains how our genes hold the secrets to what we should and shouldn't eat. Professor Ferguson joins us now. So Lynn, your lecture is called Matching Our Diet to Our Genes, a new way to optimise our health. Now this sounds like the name of a very trendy book, you know, about the caveman diet and that kind of stuff. Is that what we're talking about here?
It could be. If your genes are right, you could be really needing the caveman diet. But if your genes are like Winston Churchill, for example, you might get away with the lots of cigars and lots of whiskey diet. And it really depends
Fingers crossed, yeah.
and it really depends what your genes are. So a lot of us can suspect that we've got good genes or bad genes. If you find you've got a grandmother who lived to 113 and was drinking a case of champagne once a week or something, it probably means you've got that sort of Winston Churchill genotype. But if your ancestors were lean and mean and didn't make it past their 30s or 40s or 50s, it probably means that you need the caveman diet. But genotyping will tell you.
Is this the same as, you know, these blood type diets, for example, that we hear about? If you're an O, you can eat what you want, you know, but lots of red meat, for example. If you're an A negative, it's something else, or is this completely different?
You do start with blood types, but it's a much more advanced method of looking at blood types. So I think they were sort of grasping at the right thing, but I don't think they really had the science there. But now we're starting to understand a lot about genes. There's lots and lots of genes, and we've got masses of information, most of which is uninterpretable. But just some of the genes we're starting to realise have got really quite major implications for health, and it depends enormously how you handle it. And so if one of the examples would be the FTO gene, and they call it the fat gene, and a third of us have probably got that gene. But the bad news is that it means that no matter what we do, no matter how much we diet and exercise and all the rest of that stuff, we're going to be on average about 3 kilograms heavier. Now, life's not always fair. You don't really want to know that, yes, you've got the gene and all you have to do is exercise ferociously. But if you have the information that you've got the gene and what that seems to do is affect satiety mechanisms, it means that it's going to be harder for you to feel full with a normal sort of eating regime, then you can think about eating different types of food or even eating a different sort of eating pattern, sort of taking longer to complete a meal or starting with an apple half an hour before a meal so it actually fills you. So if you understand something about the nature of your genes and what might be distinctive about your metabolism, it gives you ways of sort of overcoming any problems.
And we could do this at birth, I take it, with that particular
gene. That, to me,
is
the ideal thing. At the moment, we do some very simple genotyping at birth, and we find out if people have got a few very simple genetic diseases. So phenylketonuria, for example, you actually treat by very, very rigid dietary recommendations. So it could be done just with a heel prick test at birth. At the moment, there's massive ethical implications because 99% of the genes, we just haven't a clue what they mean and what to do with them. But we're just starting to ease our way into the situation where we're understanding some of them. And I think it's a really exciting time. And so that's why I'm keen to talk to people about it.
Well, would it be fair to say that the direction of research and over the past two decades has moved away from, you know, in the old heredity versus environment debate, has moved away from environment and towards heredity, towards it's in your genes?
I think what I'm saying is it's both. That we always thought, you know, it was your environment, you couldn't do an awful lot about it, so you had to eat up and do the things that you're told to do. We're realising that what's good advice for one may not be good advice for another. We're also recognising that certain individuals have higher dietary requirements for certain nutrients. So, for example, I know that I have got a polymorphism in my genes for folate metabolism. What it means is that I need about double as much folate as probably you do because it's not that common a mutation. Now, that's fine because now I know it. It means I can think about changing my diet to overcome it. And for someone like myself, that's important because folate is involved in cognitive function and things like that. So knowing about it means I can think about how to eat to overcome it. So I think it is genes plus environment. No one of them is vitally important or singly important.
What sort of differences can it make by knowing and following, you know, the gene type diet? Are we talking about longevity? Are we talking about health, mental health? What?
All of those things. What we're really understanding with these big genome-wide studies, that since about 2007, there's been these massive collaborative studies that have just revolutionized the way we understand the genetics of bipolar disorder and depression and attention deficit disorder. Things that associate with diet like obesity and so on were obvious ones. But a lot of these other things, we're understanding the genes and recognizing that some of the genes are going to interact with diet, that they're going to be affecting biochemical pathways, which you can manipulate quite easily with diet. So one people are particularly fond of at the moment is the fact that there's a certain genetic group that seem to be somewhat prone to depression and for whom it seems to be a good diet choice to eat plenty of dark chocolate. So several of my colleagues are very keen to be genotyped for that one.
Is everyone in your department eating to their, have they all had their heels pricked and they're eating to their genes?
Most of us, yes.
What's the outcome been on that sort of anecdotal experiment?
Well, we can't tell you at the moment because most of us have been reasonably healthy in the first instance. But so I guess it's going to depend how long we live and whether we do develop disease at a later stage. But at the moment, I think health is good. We can think about how we should be maintaining our exercise programs and just think a little bit differently about things. The other sorts of things that it comes into is it's got effects on things like fertility, and it may be that modifying your diet to affect fertility would be something that's important for certain people. So, and I don't want to give the impression that, you know, it's a hard and fast science at the moment. No, the man in the street probably is going to have trouble getting this. We've got volunteers in our studies that we can work with.
Pick me.
Yeah. Well, you mightn't want to hear what we tell you. That's the problem. We did do a limited study on obesity in Auckland, and we worked with some of the gyms for people who were sort of wanting to modify their diet. And the student who was doing it, her brother was a chef, and he was coming up with sort of delicious recipes. And if you actually quite actively work with people and once a week say, you know, you should be increasing your omega-3s and gets lots of oily fish, and this is some delicious ways to cook them, that's absolutely great. If you're modifying glycemic index, again, and telling people what to do, it's fine. But then if you've got the genotype where really there's not an awful lot to do except increase your exercise to 1 to 2 hours a day, you're not so keen on getting that advice. So, you can come up with constructive things, but you also can tell people some things that they don't want to hear.
I can imagine that this would, if you know, eventually get political, because you'd be having things like what the school tuck shop stocked, for instance, wouldn't you?
I think that's another question that we probably shouldn't.
Or you'd be having some people saying, well, you really shouldn't be eating that meat, and if you do that, well, we're not going to insure you, for example.
That's already happening overseas, and that's why there's sort of an ethical dilemma with this. And I think there's things like that that we've got to sort out first, but it would be an awful pity if it stopped an incredibly important health advance from moving forwards.
What's the sort of the range in genotypes that, you know, in the diets that would result in, for example, would some people basically be told, just eat meat, don't eat anything else, and some people the complete opposite, or
no, and in fact I think most nutritionists or dietitians would say never, never go on a diet where you only eat meat, or you never, never eat meat and protein, or you only eat something or other else. We'd all recognise that there's a balance.
So it's tweaking within that
And thinking about lifestyle and maybe eating patterns, that it may be that it's going to work better if you're going to eat smaller meals throughout the day, but understanding your metabolism is going to be really useful to you.
It must be a very the science of it must be quite vague at times, is it, Trump? Because I mean, people are such different creatures.
Well, the science of nutrition is perhaps vague's not quite the right word. The problem is people think they're telling the truth, but actually when you look at their dietary questionnaires, even if they're quite motivated and you work out their caloric intake and the exercise level, you find that at that rate they should be losing about a kilo a week, and they actually aren't. So in other words, people sort of have a sort of eye-mouth gap somehow that they don't quite want to confess or even tell themselves what they're eating.
I know what me it is. It's the sweets on the plane every week that I take those, and I don't write those down in the things, or the biscuit here and there, and
And it's true for most people, but I think we're getting, one of the things we're starting to do is cheat a little bit, and we're using biochemical tests. In other words, we'll listen seriously while you're telling us about what you did and didn't eat, and then we'll request a urine sample and we'll look at your metabolites and say, well, you must have had a really high sugar consumption or you wouldn't be producing this. So we have got ways of checking out people just like you.
Well, look, it's fantastic, and I look forward to the day that we can all have our heel pricked. I mean, I'm all for that. You, Russell?
Yeah, well, maybe, well, like Lynn says, maybe, you know, I might find something I don't want to know.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.
It's Professor Lynn Ferguson, and if you'd like to go to that lecture and you're in Auckland, it's next Wednesday, the 13th of October at 6 p.m. in the Owen Glen Building. Coming up after the break, how close is too close to live to a motorway, and we go to the Music Awards.